This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, special treat, folks. You asked and you receive. Back and better than ever. Rick and Tom, baby.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go.
Tom Jones.
Rick and Tom, baby. Those were the days.
Yes, sir.
These are the days. These are the days.
You're right. We are the men and we are back. And it's great to have you on, as always. Especially to talk sports, which we don't get a chance to do like we did in the office every day.
That's true.
That makes it better because this is all, you know, fresh. I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking. But we're going to wade into it over these next 2 days a little bit. And I want to start with what I think is just something that has evolved, maybe unexpectedly, but you talk about mushrooming in popularity, and I think it's forever changed, and that is the women's basketball game. And in particular, because of Caitlin Clark and then Angel Reese with LSU, and that rivalry, which in and of itself was worthy, you know, of watching the rematch as they met in the national championship game a year ago. But let's start with the ratings. Tom, you used to do media all the time. You're used to seeing numbers, okay? 12.3 million viewers. More than last year's national championship game, and this is where it really got me. More than the NBA Finals, more than any regular season college football game except Ohio State and Michigan during the entire season, more than the World Series. I mean,
more than the final round of last year's Masters.
Yeah,
which is a huge deal.
Absolutely, and I know there's you know a list that's even longer than this. But, I mean, just think about the importance we place on all those events and how much money television spends, you know, to broadcast those rights, you know, championship games throughout the year. And for one basketball game, a singular basketball game, a women's game, to draw 12.3 million viewers, it's incredible. And it speaks to, in my opinion, you know, rare talents, obviously, but also sort of what I think is an evolving level of play in women's basketball. Now, maybe it's been there. I don't know. But you have what I think, you know, people are calling sort of a unicorn in Caitlin Clark. And some people are comparing her to Steph Curry, who changed the NBA, right, with his three-pointers from the logo and now – you know, the game has taken that on. But I've never seen many players, men or women, that could impact the game as many ways as she did. 41 points, 12 rebounds, or 12 assists and 7 rebounds. And she makes everyone better. She has this, you know, Mamba mentality that you've seen from other great athletes throughout the years. What do you make of the popularity? Is it a singular rivalry? Is it what happened playing off of last year? Last year's ratings were, I think, 10 million. So,
yeah. So the thing that surprised me about this year was when we realized there was going to be a rematch between LSU and Iowa. Yeah. And we all got excited because remember what happened last year was one of the highest rated games ever. And certainly the highest rated game before in the ESPN era. But here's the thing. When I saw this game coming out, I said, this is going to be a Monday night. The game's going to be on ESPN as compared to last year's national championship game, which was on ABC. Now, there's a huge difference even today between cable and network TV. So I thought this game this year, it's going to get a good number. It might approach the 9.9 million that they got a year ago, but I don't think it's going to get quite there. And then to see that the number came out was 12.9 million. And I was absolutely, it peaked at like 16 million at one point. Mm. And I was blown away by it. By the way, it's not only the most watched women's game on ESPN. And the most watched women's game, I believe, since the national championship game in 1983 between USC and Louisiana Tech, which, by the way, had a guard.
Yeah, they did.
Kim Mulkey was on.
Yeah, they did. Who I saw play that very year. Or actually, 2 years.
Scrappy little player. My God. Nice player.
Unbelievable. You see the way she coaches? She was more maniacal as a player. You couldn't stop her. I mean, she was mouthy. She was in everybody's face. She dove all over the court. And it didn't matter that she's not close to the tallest player, but she dominated women's basketball.
And so I think just the fact that that many people got involved this year, and you're right about Caitlin Clark. You know, I have my favorite stat in all of sports, in sports history. I have a favorite stat. My favorite stat is this, that if you took Wayne Gretzky's goals away, if you didn't count any of Wayne Gretzky's goals, and you just counted his assists, he would still be the highest point producer in NHL history. If you don't even count his goals. Oh, and by the way, he has more goals than anybody too. Yeah. But if you just count his, he had more assists than anybody else had goals and assists in NHL history. My second favorite stat, I think, is this year, Caitlin Clark became the all-time Division I scorer, men or women, in NCAA history, Division I. And she also led the nation in assists. Mm. Like, that's remarkable when you think about it. To not only be somebody who can put up 40, 41 points a game, but also dish out 12 assists. And as you mentioned a minute ago, make everyone around her better. Look, there have been great players. Rick, you've seen them. Diana Taurasi, Sue Bird, Cheryl Miller, which we played in that game against Kim Mulkey back in 83. Rebecca Lobo.
Absolutely.
I thought was a sensational player. So there have been great players before Caitlin Clark, just as there were great players in the NBA before Steph Curry. But these are transformational players. Like, they have changed not only the way the game is played, the way we watch the game. And the thing, Rick, that I was blown away with in this game Monday night, I watched it. I was just like, there are a lot of games where a player will, it's like, okay, this is the moment. If you're a great player, you're going to step up in this moment. And if she'd have come out on Monday night and scored 25 points and had 12 assists, we'd be raving about, Rick, she was shooting from practically half court.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she looked like Curry.
Oh, yeah.
And I have so much respect for players who rise to the occasion and say, I'm going to take over this game. And LSU played fine. Like, Angel Reese had you could make an argument first half, Angel Reese was the best player on the court. Yeah. And I thought you put it perfectly, Rick. Like, I think she has changed the game in such a way that it changes the way, not only the way that it's played, but the way we perceive it. I'm blown away by how good she is.
It's hard to believe that on the, I guess, Neanderthal level, there used to be people, and you know them, Tom, that would say, I love basketball. I love women. I hate women's basketball. You know, like, it's the most sexist thing you could say. But in watching these athletes, and the athleticism of these women now, you know, are they playing above the rim? Not all of them. Some can. You know, there's women that can dunk in college basketball and in the WNBA. But they play the game. They play a game that we were used to seeing kind of growing up, right? You share the ball, where everybody has movement. When you can elevate, like, I don't know. I don't have any way to judge the other four starters on Iowa's team. I know they have numbers. I know they got to be pretty damn good. My guess is if they were out there, you know, in the transfer portal, they'd all get a scholarship. But I don't know that they'd be the first pick of every team. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great team, but they're playing with an unbelievable player who instills so much confidence, and her ability to see the floor and, like you said, rise to the moment. When she came out in the third quarter and hit three deep threes, and, you know, listening to Kim Mulkey after the game, it's like, well, you know, is there anything else you could have done to try to stop her? She's just like, no. You know, like, you got to try to defend everybody, you know, because.
Well, people are jumping over Kim Mulkey. Like, look, I'm no Kim Mulkey fan. Right. Let's start there. But people are jumping over, like, oh, her team did a horrible job defending. Like, you don't guard people 40 feet from the hoop. You just don't.
No. You want them to take a low
especially
percentage
her,
shot.
Yeah. You know, who can go by, you know.
And, you know, she just created.
What I like about this women's game these days, like, it's not, you know, you don't have to go back that far, Rick. You go back maybe 10 years, and I covered some of these games, and I think so did you when the Women's Final Four was here, that when UConn was here. It was kind of like UConn and everybody else.
Right.
And it was that way for a long time. I mean, for a good while, it was Tennessee and
everybody else.
And then UConn caught up and then surpassed Tennessee. And then it was UConn and everybody else. And we were writing stories. I think I even wrote the columns, Rick. Is UConn women's – is it bad for women's basketball?
Yeah, they're so dominant. They have, yeah.
Right. And I looking back now, it was a pretty – those were bad columns because I think it raised the level of play of everybody.
Yeah.
And now it's not just – Iowa and Caitlin Clark. I mean, it's Paige Beckers and UConn.
Yeah.
It's South Carolina, which might be
the best team in the nation. Yeah.
The best team in the nation, right, with Dawn Staley, and they have a terrific program. LSU, you could run those two teams back out tomorrow, Iowa and LSU, and LSU might win by 8.
Agree.
You know,
agree.
So, and then you have other players, Juju Watkins at USC,
yeah.
And other programs that are coming on. UCLA's got a good program. Kansas State beat Iowa this year. Iowa's gone through a tough bracket. So it's the thing that I think is great is it's not just one player, it's not just one team. It's several players, several teams. And now I the big question I have now, Rick, is what happens now? Like Caitlin Clark's gonna leave.
Yeah.
Now, does that impact women's college basketball? I think not. I think there will still be enough interest in it. Does it impact the WNBA? I would like to think that it will.
I think that's the biggest boost to all of this. I think the WNBA,
I think so.
Who could also get Angel Reese. Now, if Angel Reese comes back and plays at LSU, you've got your superstar returning to women's college basketball. Right. And that's a possibility. I mean, you know, and the other thing we can talk about is what NIL has done, you know, to keep all athletes in college longer because, frankly, sometimes there's not as much money once they become pro is what they're making now, you know, but no, I think that the college game will be looking for its next superstar, but here's sort of the macro of it all, right? How many young women, girls, teenage girls, preteen girls have right. watched, you know, Caitlin Clark and are out in the driveway, you know, mimicking her. And I can just picture, you know, a bunch of coaches and dads going, no, don't shoot from so far out, you know, and it's like, well, Caitlin does it. And, you know, her coach will tell you, yeah, she wasn't strong enough to launch from where she's launching now when she first started, but she had range and confidence. But I think it's going to grow the game immeasurably because of those 12.3 million viewers, there's a lot of moms and dads and daughters sitting there watching this. And saying,
I think you hit on a great point, Rick, and it really is the comparison is Steph Curry.
I think so,
and it's because of the way Steph Curry's changed game. You know, we had a commercial when you and I were much younger. It was like, be like Mike. Everybody wants to be like Mike, and they're talking about Michael Jordan. Here's the problem: nobody could be like Mike.
No one.
Like he because he played above the rim and he did things that few other people could do. And when you watch the superstars of past eras. Like in the NBA anyway, and in even in college basketball, men's college basketball, they played above the rim. Steph Curry made it cool to play below the rim. Steph Curry made it cool to play 30 feet from the basket and be a star and change the game.
Right.
And that's what That's what Caitlin Clark's doing. It's not the old, you know,
jamming inside, get fouled, go to the line.
Yeah, jamming inside, kick it back outside, go to the line, you know, maybe shoot a 15-footer, 20-footer.
Yeah.
That was the range for everybody. Mm-hmm. And now Caitlin Clark has shown, like you watch these women's games, Rick, and I probably watched more women's college basketball the last couple of years because I really like watching Caitlin Clark. I like watching Paige Beckers now that she's healthy again. I like watching Angel Reese. I really liked watching Juju Watkins, and I think she's going to be fun to watch over the next couple of years if she stays. Like, it's a fun brand of basketball to watch. I don't think we could always say that about the women's game. There were a lot of times where it was a little too plodding, a little too robotic. They've changed the game. I think Caitlin Clark, I think you're right, Rick. There are girls who are watching that game. When I say girls, I'm talking about little girls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who are watching the game who say, yeah, like you just said, they're out in the driveway and maybe there never was a basketball hoop there before. Now there is. And they're shooting
from way down
the driveway. They're trying to shoot from the street.
Absolutely.
You know, into the driveway.
Yeah. Just like the guys that followed Steph Curry. I mean, it's about the three-pointer, it's about spreading the floor, and I think it's made for a better game because they're not all packed inside. You know, Rebecca Lobo was a phenomenal player, but if you got the ball down in the paint with her, there wasn't many people that could stop her without fouling, you know?
Right.
And like I said, the game is faster. What I liked about it is there wasn't an abundance of turnovers in this game, you know? At one point, Iowa was being out-rebounded, and they ended up with a big edge. which is all effort. Yep. I thought it was terrific and great for not just great for women's basketball, which will translate to the next level. The WNBA needs those ratings. They need help, right? There's some teams that do okay, but on the whole, I think we forget about a lot of the women that go to that league. That won't be the case anymore.
Yeah.
That will not be the case anymore.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think the next, we're going to find out about the WNBA over the next 5 years.
Absolutely.
Because that's really a pivotal moment. Because if the WNBA can't take Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Juju Watkins
and raise their profile
and Paige Beckers and turn them into like watch must see TV, then I'm not sure it's ever going to happen.
Well,
unfortunately,
and you know what I also dig, and of course, me and you would have sort of arguments at times about this. Now I think the pendulum may have swung too far the other way, because the genie is out of the bottle. But the NIL, you know, not only would you watch the other night Caitlin Clark, you know, just launching 35 footers and making them and putting her team in a lead, then they'd go to a commercial. And I swear to you, Tom, two of every three commercials was Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. She does the State Farm commercial. And yeah. The other advantage, I think, too, and this is where NIL ultimately could help again. And again, we're going to sound like you're back in my day. But really, there was a time when, you know, you and I watched Bobby Hurley and Christian Laettner. And it seemed, I swear that Christian Laettner played college basketball for 17 years. He was at Duke for 17 years.
He was.
That's what
Along before him was Danny Ferry. He was there for 18 years.
Danny Ferry was there for 17. There was a guy 1,000 years ago, but the only older people remember this name. There was a guy named Bill Paterno played at Notre Dame. I swear Bill Paterno played from 1963 to 1989, and he played college basketball for 27 years. But here's the thing. Being serious now, like, the reason that game on Monday night drew so many people, LSU, Iowa, is because these were the same two teams that played a year ago.
Absolutely.
The same two superstars. And people remember that game. It's just like, I remember watching the UNLV Duke game when Duke won the national title a year after UNLV absolutely destroyed them in the semifinal, like beat them, like embarrassed them bad in the final. And they came back the next year, I think, and beat them in the semifinals. It was... You remember because it goes year after year. It's what made the Carolina-Duke rivalry so great, because they played each other year after year after year. So maybe the NIL will help in some ways, that guys will stick around, women will stick around a little bit longer to play college basketball, and we'll get to know them a little bit better.
That'd be nice.
Before they go to the NBA. It would be nice.
Yeah, so. I think it's possible. And I know it's happening in college football. You know, right. Maybe not this year. I think, you know, the number one pick is not going to stay at USC. He's going to go to the Bears, I believe. Although the reports are he made $9 million last year, so that's you know, not much more than he'll be guaranteed for 4 years as a NFL player. That said, I think rivalries, you hit it on the head. We love rivalries. And Duke was always, you know, back in their heyday, that team, right? They were so good, and Krzyzewski and the Dukies and all this, that they became sort of villains, you know, ACC and elsewhere, partially because when you win, everybody wants to knock you off that perch, right?
Sure.
But Iowa didn't win. And yet LSU played the villain. I don't know that they asked to necessarily. There's a lot of reasons why they were painted that way. And I think some of the things that Angel Reese did at the end of the game last year with the pointing to the ring on her finger and, you know, sort of the I can't see you stuff, which, by the way, Caitlin Clark had done earlier.
Right, right. Yeah, Caitlin Clark is maybe the biggest trash talker in college basketball. Although I saw a poll the other day that Angel Reese barely edged out Caitlin Clark as the biggest trash talker.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're 1A, 1B, right?
Sure, exactly. And here's the thing. They were both cool with it.
Yeah.
Like, with the other.
And I think, you know, and we'll get into what Reese said after the game, but I think that's good for sport. I think it's good for college basketball and women's college basketball, because you have to have sort of a little bit of juice, you know, to those rivalries. And you don't want to see poor sportsmanship or, you know, all that stuff. Now,
yeah, dirty player.
Yeah, we don't want it to get out of hand. We don't need the Pistons, you know, going up in the stands or anything. But having said all that, I want your opinion on this, a couple things, and we'll get to what was written about LSU during this tournament in a minute. But after the game, Angel Reese was reflective, even tearful at times, talking about all the stuff, put it mildly, she's gone through, you know, since last year, since winning the national championship. Now, some of that stuff has been really lucrative, great stuff. And she wasn't necessarily complaining about her fame or her team or any of that. But there did ring sort of a, you know, first of all, to the victor goes the spoils, right? Everything's great when you're winning, but when you lose, you got to own it, you know?
Right.
And I almost kind of felt like there was a little bit of victimhood. And I don't know that it's totally unwarranted, by the way, because I can't hear what people are yelling at her from the stands. I've not been to an LSU right. game. I don't know.
And she talked about being sexualized and getting death threats.
There's never an excuse for that, ever.
No, there's never an excuse for that. And I'm not sure that's what you're talking about.
No, I'm not.
We're not talking about that. We're just
death threats. And, you know, I don't, nobody can condone that.
And we have no idea what it's like to be a black woman, you know.
Absolutely not.
And I'm sure there's a definitely a racial element.
There has to be. You would imagine there is.
Yeah. Right.
But she was honest enough to point it out. And, you know, I heard some takes that they ran the gamut on these talk shows of, you know, well, you know, you can't be doing this when you win and then complaining about your treatment when you lose.
Right.
And I guess some of that's fair, except I'm not sure that that's totally what she meant. You know, I don't know how deep the insults cut. I don't know what it's like to be in her shoes every day in every court.
Right.
You know, we're all human at some level. The interesting thing is the amount of respect between teams and between those two players in particular, you know, who have played against each other long before they went to LSU and Iowa. You know, they've right. competed before. I don't know if they've ever been on the same team or not, but they were very familiar with each other. And even in the post game, you could tell the amount of respect that they each have, which was also cool because that's what sport is about. But I think a lot of people made a story sort of out of her reaction, you know, post game, which those things are always tough anyway, because you've just lost, right? You're not going back to the Final Four. She faces a big decision. She may be losing or leaving all her LSU teammates. So in that moment.
Yeah. You know, Rick, I think I know what you're saying about that too. Look, we're going to quote you after a game, but at the same time, I don't know that we should take everything that you say 5 minutes after a game.
Yeah.
Serious or as serious as we would if you waited a day to say it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure that some of the things that people have said to her, some of the things that people have sent her, you know, said about her on social media, sent her in emails, said to her, yelled from the court, I'm sure are the most disgusting things that you can imagine. And again, we're not talking about any of that stuff.
No.
At the same time, though, look, people don't like your program because they don't like your coach. That's part of it.
I think that's part of it.
And I think that's a big part of it. And Kim Mulkey seems to embrace some of that sometime, which is I'm totally down with that, too. Like, I don't like Kim Mulkey, and I don't think she cares that I don't like
her. No, she does not.
She doesn't care.
She does not.
Now, the other thing, and there is a little bit of like, hey, you guys are going to talk trash. When you lose, people are going to talk it back to you, and you can't turn around and say, oh, people are treating me mean. You know, now again, the death threats, I'm not talking about that stuff, but just the general, nah, go home, you're done, see you later. Like, you're going to get that back. You can't turn around and say, oh, that's not the way you should treat people.
Right.
Because you do it to them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I also got the same thing. It's funny. I got an email. I've been writing a lot about Caitlin Clark in my Pointer newsletter just because of the numbers.
Yeah.
And we call it the Clark effect, the TV numbers. And somebody wrote me and just ripped Caitlin Clark up and down, just ripped them.
About what though? Exactly.
And so about she complains about calls, she whines too much. She complains about calls. She's always complaining. She yells at her teammates. And basically just the way she behaves on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And as it got on, and we went back and forth, and I'm like, well, how's that any different than Jordan used to, or that, you know, Larry Bird was as big a trash talker as there ever was? Like, how's it say? Well, they went back. And then I found out the guy's from Nebraska, and he's a huge Nebraska
okay.
fan. I'm like, there we go. Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of that with LSU. Look, LSU won the national championship last year. Mm-hmm. You know who didn't like it? Every team that they played, you know? So there is a little bit of, like you mentioned a minute ago, you're the villain because you won. There's a little, there's that as well.
You know how many people hate Tom Brady to this day?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I do think a lot of it comes back to A, that they're really good, yeah. and B, it's a Kim Mulkey factor. A lot of people don't like Mulkey. But look, Rick, I'm not going to lie to you. There is a racial element to this.
No question.
You know, Caitlin Clark's white, Angel Reese is black. There was this perceived, you know, sort of rivalry last year in terms of like how they felt about each other when there was nothing but respect. And then there was that article in the LA Times, mm-hmm. which was a sort of painted LSU as, I know what the writer was trying to do. He just failed miserably
and
at
wrote
it,
a long sort apology of painting LSU. About it too, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he did. And he had to, because he was, he needed to apologize for that column, because it painted LSU. You know, you always want like sort of, it's easy to paint like you want a rivalry, like you have this team is finesse and this team is power. And you try to contrast this team is this and this team is that. Exactly. So you look at Caitlin Clark, everybody, America's sweetheart, everybody loves her, everybody roots for Iowa. She's the hero of all these girls, you know. And then you got the bad guy, you know. And they painted LSU unfairly. You know, there are probably as many kids out there who look up to Angel Reese as they do Caitlin Clark and respect it the way she plays the game.
Yeah.
And she's won a national championship. So I understand why LSU felt like, hey, this isn't right. You know, it's kind of what happened with Rutgers a few years ago and the whole, you know, painting them as Don Imus getting in trouble. Like, it's so wrong. Like, just treat them like the people they deserve to be treated. It's one thing to root against the team. That's fine. But, you know, don't paint them out as bad people. And that's the way it came off. Like, these are bad people. Yeah. Not that you don't like them as a team or as, like, the same thing happened with, you know, with, I think a little bit of Duke, that happened with Duke, where, like, we didn't like them as players, but no one was saying that Christian Laettner was a bad guy, right. or that Danny Hurley was a bad person. Krzyzewski's another story. People don't like Krzyzewski. But I just think it's when we start to think that we know these people, I don't know, maybe that's a step forward in a weird sort of way for college basketball, women's college basketball, that I'm getting emails, people complaining about Caitlin Clark's behavior
if
on the court.
If it sells, babe.
I don't know. Would they do it about a man? Maybe.
If it sells.
That's why I wrote back to this guy, and I'm like, did you complain about Kobe? Because Kobe did the same
stuff.
There
you go.
You know?
There you go.
And Jordan and Bird.
You've written a lot of these columns, right, where you have to take a position, and maybe it's one you're trying to show contrast, you know, between one team and another or one player and another. I don't think the term dirty debutantes would ever be something that you would get by your filter. No. I think if you just look that up, it's probably one you don't want to use. And I'm all for alliteration, but that was that.
And that's what the writer was going for here. Yeah. But
and I understand how you could get there, maybe, but it was poor taste, and he paid for it, and it was absurd. Now it's sports. As far as Mulkey goes, you know, there was this run up to the Washington Post story where they anticipated it was coming out, and she predicted it was a hit job, which, by the way, I'm not sure it was.
It was not.
I'm sure she took it very personal, but she actually put more eyeballs on that product before it was even written. So
she did a couple of things here, I thought, because a lot of people read the story and said, that's a nothing burger.
Yeah.
There was nothing in it. Now, I totally disagree. I thought it was a really well-written profile. And it's not as if the Washington Post promised, like, hey, we're about to come out with a piece that's going to bury Kim
Mulkey.
No,
they never
said
that.
Right. It was Kim Mulkey who said that. Like, they're about to come out with a piece that I'm going to sue them.
Mm-hmm.
for.
Yeah.
And, you know, she of course brought a lot of attention to it, but at the same time, she set it up, and I don't think she did it on purpose. I don't know. Maybe she's crazy like a fox. I don't know, but maybe she set it up. I don't think she did though, to set it up to say like this, there's a bad story coming about me and you shouldn't read it. And then once we did read it, it was like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's
all. And you called attention to it.
But I actually thought it was a really good story. It really gave me a lot of insight. There was a lot in there that I didn't know about her. Now, there was a lot that we did know about her. And it was a lot of like, you know, how does she feel about players? You know, it sort of made some allegations about how she, at least from other people, saying she asked players to sort of downplay their sexuality if they were gay.
Yeah, don't ask, don't tell kind of attitude.
The whole Brittany Griner. Like, how did she feel about Brittany Griner? She really didn't step up for her while Brittany Griner was in Russia. That's one of her former players at Baylor. Mm-hmm. So there are people who had bad relationships with her, just like there were people who had, I'm sure, bad relationships with Bob Knight or another, you know, any other fiery coach that you can think of. So I don't know. I actually thought it was a really well-written story. She probably wasn't crazy about some of the stuff involving her dad.
There's some family stuff and she's got some relationship issues. You know what? So does Aaron Rodgers, you know?
So does a lot of people in his life. So does everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. And unfortunately, my kids probably will have that with me at some level. Hopefully not where we're estranged, but, you know, you never know how I'm going to screw them up. It's possible. But it's one of those things. And I guess when you're writing those, Tom, I guess, do you constantly tell yourself, is this fair? Like, what was your approach to, like, was it just what you thought? And maybe what you're writing is what you believe, right? I would hope that was the case.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because you and I used to talk about this when we did a radio show at WDAE, and there was never any fake outrage. We never took a stance that we didn't actually believe in. Yeah. And I can say, and I think I can speak for you too, I've never written anything just to get a reaction.
Right.
I've never said like, you know what? I actually think this guy should be fired, but I'm going to argue that he should stay. Yeah.
Be the contrarian, like, and people call that clickbait. Yeah. And I don't even know what that means to this day, because I don't know who reads my stories. So, you know, but that was.
Well, I hope people do read my stories. So, but yeah, I'm writing. Yeah. But it's meant as an insult. And I think it's hard to keep your story straight if you're changing your stance, you know, every time. Mm-hmm. You know. So I've always felt like, okay, I'm gonna write what I actually believe. But there are moments, Rick, where you do have to remind yourself, and I'm sure you run into this all the time, that these are people that you're writing.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy to forget that. And it's particularly easy to forget it if you're writing about people that you don't really know or you don't see on a daily basis. So if I were writing about, or right here, we're talking about Kim Mulkey, and I just said a little while ago, I don't like Kim Mulkey, just based on some of the things she said, some of the things she's done in press conferences and her attitude towards COVID and all that sort of thing. That's what I don't care for her about. But if I covered her every day and I saw a different side of her, would I feel differently? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like, John Tortorella is a guy that people are like, oh, you must have couldn't stand covering. I loved covering John Tortorella. I thought he was great to cover, and I had a good relationship with him. I'm sure there were people, Rick, that you covered who, like, you know, looked at you and said, oh, you must not have been able to stand that guy. Like Sapp. Sapp's somebody who could be difficult to deal with. You had a pretty decent relationship with Sapp, though.
Yeah, right? I still do. I mean, believe me, there were days we called it the dangling hand when you go over there, and especially people from out of town that he didn't know. And they go to shake his hand on his bench at the old One Buck place, and he just let it look at them. You're going to deal with that with professional athletes all the time. You know, you wrote, and I think age is part of this too, right? Kim Mulkey is a grown woman. She makes millions of dollars coaching women's basketball, okay? And she's got a whole career and pattern of where she got here, how she got here, who she's about, right, all of that. So a profile on her is one thing. Do you have the same sort of scrutiny for a 21-year-old or a 23? Like, you wrote a column, and I thought it was a good column about Jameis Winston, some offensive things that he said at an elementary school that mm-hmm. appeared to be sexist in nature, telling the girls to sit down. I don't want to lose the context here, but
yeah, the girls are supposed to be silent. Yeah, quiet,
but you were very critical. But you know, you can't. I mean, there's certain things you just can't stand there at the plate and take a ball. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you got to call them out on it when you do, because I think even though we're all maturing at a different rate sometimes, you're still the face of a franchise. You're still a quarterback in the National Football League. Like, I think status and age also play into this somehow, if that makes sense.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think, though, you go back to fairness. And I'd always bring this up. Like, there are a lot of people to this day who are still upset with me that I wrote that column about Jameis and what he said at the school without realizing a couple things. Number one, like I pointed out in that column, look, he did not have to be there that day. He was his day That's off right. and he was spending time with kids. You know, he could have been home playing video games. He could have gone to the beach. Right. He could have done whatever he well pleased. Yep. And no one would have known or had a problem that he wasn't spending his off day at a That's school right. with kids. So I gave him credit for that. Here's the other thing, Rick. Out of everybody, out of that entire story, only one person on planet Earth reached out to him and asked what was going through your mind when you said that. And that was me. Mm. I called and I got his, and there's a quote in that column from him about what he said, which, by the way, he apologized.
Yeah, he did.
So there is a fairness about it. Like, if I would have sat there and just taken nothing but cheap shots, right. and this is what we're talking about, like, how do you treat players? And look, there was a little bit of, Jameis, this wasn't the first time there were questions about.
He came into the league with questions about attitudes toward women.
Involving women. Yeah. And so this was, that had something else had to do
with it. It's context,
Right. Now, like, again, we talked about, I think there are times, and context is a perfect word, Rick, and you've dealt with this and I've dealt with this. There are times where you go into a locker room right after a tough loss, and sometimes you might give an athlete a benefit of a doubt of saying, like, look, he's really emotional right now.
Absolutely.
She's really emotional right now. Like Angel Reese the other night, like, I thought her words were very powerful.
I did too.
You know, and what she said was disturbing, quite frankly. Not disturbing that she said it, disturbing that these things happened to her. And so, but, you know, or the other night, or Juju Watkins, like, walked off the floor in tears and really didn't shake the hands of, I mean, she shook the hands of the UConn players, but really didn't look him in the eye and hug him and all that stuff. And I saw some criticism, like, oh, look at her, the poor loser. Like, she's 19 years old, 18, 19 years old, and just lost a game to go to the Final Four. I'm going to cut her a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
Here, you know,
I mean, the Detroit Pistons walked right by Michael Jordan and the entire Bulls bench one time. And
they don't
and
get
they're
a pass.
Professionals.
You know why? Because those guys were professionals and they were 30 years
old.
They
knew better.
And they had won before. Yeah. And they were the bad boys. And they embraced that stuff anyway.
That's right. Yeah. So it's interesting. So
it's a good topic.
It really
it's
is. Context matters. And I thought the WAPO story was more of a profile. And maybe, you know, if Kim Mulkey could have designed the profile, she may not have included some of her family issues. She may have had a different bet. But you know what? Here's the other thing that's true with our with writing those things. They gave her 2 years to respond. And then when they sent her questions, 10 questions, and she said, oh, now I'm entering the tournament, and I just get 10 questions. No, you had 2 years. They've been trying to get you respond for
you
this.
You had 2 years, and you also it gave you 48. You wrote a 4-page memo telling everybody what happened.
Right.
In a statement, when you could have answered the 12 email questions that they sent you, instead of going out and hiring the best defamation
lawyer
in the country, which I don't think did. I think you're just
saying that. Yeah, rattling sabers.
And somebody asked me that the other day. Like, I did get an email about this. Like, hey, what about the timing of this? Saying, did they wait for the tournament? I'm like, I don't know, but there are more eyes on women's college basketball right now. So it is a timely event. You're not, Tigers coming to town to play the Valspar. I'm not going to write about it a month ahead of time. I'm going to write about it today.
Or
he's
a
here,
month, or a month so, after. I mean, I think people fail to understand that this is a business and you want eyeballs on your work. But maybe they could have written it a year earlier if she'd have responded too.
Right. This was one the other day. I got an email, and there was some discussion about 60 Minutes did a, just to go off sports for a second. 60 Minutes did a profile of Marjorie Taylor Greene, and then there was another story. I was at the Washington. I want to say the Washington Post, but it may have been in the New York Times. I can't remember. Did a profile of Lauren Boebert, the congresswoman from Colorado, controversial congresswoman. And people are saying, why are you writing about these people, giving them oxygen to spread some of the things that they say? And I'm like, you know what? There were things I read the Lauren Boebert profile, and I'm like, wow, there were things in that profile that I did not know about her. And it didn't make me any more sympathetic or make me like her any more or less.
It may have made you understand.
But it made me understand
who she is.
Her a little. Yeah. And here's the thing. I read that Kim Mulkey thing. And I knew about the Kim Mulkey stuff when it came to Brittany Griner. Yeah. I'd heard their stories have always been out there about her some of her conservative values, opinions, however you
want to
phrase
it. Yeah, she doesn't hide those.
Right. But some of the stuff with her dad, and I didn't know any of that. I didn't know her family background,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
And so now does that make me like her more or less? I don't know, but I understand her a little bit better.
Well, your story, no matter how much we'd like to edit the bad parts. And when you're a public figure and a successful one, you know, there's a reason why you're in a very high profile business that 12.3 million people want to watch your games and you get rewarded handsomely for it. It comes with the territory. It just does.
Well, and that's, I'm sure, Rick, you get a lot of that where it's like, hey, this is none of your business.
Oh, all the
why
time.
Are you
yeah.
digging into this? And look, there's one thing. Let me make something clear, and you'll back me up on this. If we wrote everything
oh
that we knew
God.
About every single player, like, you would be stunned.
I'd have to wait until everyone was dead or I was on my deathbed, because I'm quite certain, and not many people talk to me now, I know no one would talk to me again.
But here's the thing. If it affects their performance, if it affects their standing in a community, if it affects how they play the game. Yeah. Like, those I think are fair.
How
game.
About if it's factual?
Well, it's factual too, but look, there, I covered here. Look, I covered players
we all have.
Back
I know what
in
you're
the day.
Say.
Okay. Where I've gone out at late at mm-hmm. night to have a few beers after a
yep.
game.
You saw
and
some behavior.
Came back to a hotel yeah. and saw athletes with women who were not their wives mm-hmm. leaving the hotel. Right. Now, do I care? Is that any of my business? No, I never wrote those yeah. things. No, if player's out constantly and he's out at, you see him at, 5:30 in the morning when you're on your way to the airport and they're just coming in
yeah.
and they also play poorly. Mm-hmm. Is it now fair game to say, hey, this guy's staying out late. I don't know. Maybe that is fair game. Now, we don't have to say what he was doing out late. We're just saying this is a guy who's partying too much. I don't know. We rarely wrote those stories, but this idea that we're constantly into the personal lives of athletes, they get a lot of room. They get a lot of room from us.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't affect their play and some of it is none of our business. Like a guy's relation, last year got weird. 2 years ago got weird with the whole Brady Giselle thing. I'm sure you had to navigate.
Oh, well, yeah, there was very little of it we could actually write, because short of a document or him actually talking about it or her, it was speculation. It was good speculation, as it turned out. But yeah, I think.
Well, and it wasn't finger pointing. Like plenty of people have been through divorces,
separations, like, all kinds of things.
We get that. Like, people will understand that stuff. Like, but is that? I don't know. And the answer is, I don't know. I'm not saying.
Well,
there is.
I think
like,
when the player,
if the guy's going out not playing well,
when the player loses 25 pounds in front of your very eyes, and he misses 10 days of training camp. There becomes like, is this, is his personal life affecting his play on the field? And I think right. that's a fair question, but you have to get that from somebody else,
Right. And it's not like we go in, well, here's the reason why their marriage is suffering.
No.
It's not about that, but it's like, look, he is having a personal
yeah,
issue.
Yeah. Which he finally admitted.
And
he goes, look,
here's why he's not
I'm
here.
45. Yeah. I got a lot of bleep going on. And that's as close to he came as, as revealing. And then, let the New York Post and others with different standards write what they want to write. But, that's something right. we struggle with all the time. And believe me, I've talked to more lawyers in the last 4 years than I care to ours in particular, that I care to spend any time on. So it's an interesting topic, and people should check out your column on pointer.org, your daily newsletter. It's a must read in the industry, outside the industry. You talk about sports, you talk about media, you talk about politics, everything. And you've been doing it for a long time now, since your days as a columnist with the Tampa Bay Times. Let's do this again, only I'll keep you a little shorter next time. This was
worries. Just, we start talking about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese.
It's like,
isn't it great to talk about college? I could talk about Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark.
I love
all day.
It.
It was so. I wish they could play best of five, best of seven.
Yeah,
I'd watch those two go at it over and over and over.
And I wish this had somehow made it to the Final Four. I wish this could be for all the marbles, you know, rather than who got to the Final Four. But that's just the way it is with seedings and
whatnot. I tell you what, I got news for you. Paige Beckers and UConn might be.
Oh, it's going to be good. Clark, yeah. Iowa. It's going to be good. I mean,
and then whoever wins that game might lose to
South Carolina. They might. This thing is a long way from over.
And NC State's like, whoa, we're in there.
What about us?
We're playing too.
Yeah. So we got a lot more.
Tell you what about you. I think you're going to get. I think they're out. But it's pretty wild. You, NC State men and women both.
Yeah. There. No. And NC State men, you talk about a journey. They had to win like something like 9 games. They had a miracle shot in the ACC tournament, which they then had to win to make it into the tournament, and now they're in the Final Four. It's an incredible.
I keep seeing Jim Valvano in my head running around the court.
Well, that's the last time.
This reminds me so much of that 83.
It's the last time, 1983, that they have been.
Survive in advance. That's it, man.
You know, what was it? Wittenberg puts up the shot, and, you know, they grab it and throw it in at the buzzer.
Renzo Charles, I think.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining us. We'll do this again real quick tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.